It's Wednesday, July 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, President Trump is in Belgium for a NATO summit.
Dear America, appreciate your allies. After all, you don't have that many.
Also ahead, President Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court makes the Senate rounds. All members and the coach of a Thai boys soccer team are rescued. Breastfeeding could help save thousands of babies each year. And wild celebrations when France qualifies for the World Cup final. That's on today's International Edition. Thanks for being with us. U.S. President Donald Trump is in Brussels, the home to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and the European Union, two steadfast allies with whom the American leader has increasingly put himself at odds. On Tuesday, Trump tossed barbs at both organizations on Twitter. He again bluntly demanded that NATO members contribute more money to the defense alliance that has been the linchpin of the West's post-World War II military cooperation. Since Trump's election 17 months ago, European leaders have fretted and fumed about the president's bashing, but have hesitated to lash back publicly. That changed on Tuesday, just as the U.S. president was leaving for the trip across the Atlantic Ocean. European Council President Donald Tusk, after signing a statement on cooperation between the EU and NATO, said Trump should stop berating NATO allies and Europe should live up to its commitments.
First of all, dear America, appreciate your allies. After all, you don't have that many. And the Europe spend more on your defense because everyone respects an ally that is well prepared and equipped.
On the White House South Lawn, when asked about Tusk's comment, Trump repeated his assertion that NATO has taken advantage of the United States.
Well, we do have a lot of allies, but we cannot be taken advantage of. We're being taken advantage of by the European Union. We lost $151 billion last year on trade. And on top of that, we spend at least 70% for NATO. And frankly, it helps them a lot more than it helps us.
The president also said that NATO countries should pay the full 2% of their gross domestic product to maintain the alliance.
NATO has not treated us fairly, but I think we'll work something out. We pay far too much, and they pay far too little. But we will work it out, and all countries will be happy.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said in Brussels that European nations will step up cooperation on military mobility and on what he called hybrid threats and to stop terrorism.
This new declaration demonstrates our desire to deepen and broaden our cooperation. Facing a complex and uncertain security environment, we must work together to keep our nations and our citizens safe. And that is exactly what we are doing.
President Trump has repeatedly complained that European automakers have an unfair trade advantage compared to their American competitors. The president has slapped new border taxes on steel and aluminum. He also has applied tariffs to foreign agricultural and other products, including those from neighbors Canada and Mexico. Targeted countries have responded with punitive tariffs. A tit-for-tat with China has brought the world's two largest economies to the precipice of a full-scale trade war. Following the discussions in Belgium, Trump heads to the United Kingdom, where he will be hosted by British Prime Minister Theresa May, who suddenly finds herself embroiled in domestic political upheaval stemming from intra-party disagreement over terms for the country's exit from the EU. Following the visits to England and Scotland, where Trump owns two golf resorts, the president heads to Helsinki for a highly anticipated summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Trump said Tuesday he could not characterize his views of Putin, but he hopes for fruitful talks.
I really can't say right now. As far as I'm concerned, a competitor. I think that getting along with Russia, getting along with China, getting along with others is a good thing, not a bad thing. I've said that many times for many years.
President Trump has faced substantial criticism from opposition Democrats and more muted concern among lawmakers of his own Republican Party for hesitating to criticize Putin and Russian actions since his election. Among the top stories in the world, Trump arrives in Brussels amid tension with NATO and EU, Pompeo to urge more pressure on Iran on NATO sidelines, Trump's Supreme Court pick woos senators amid partisan storm, all 12 boys and coach rescued from Thai cave, provincial assembly candidate among 14 killed in Pakistan blast. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on the voanews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. One day after U.S. President Donald Trump nominated him for the Supreme Court, federal judge Brett Kavanaugh on Tuesday met with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and other top Republicans, accompanied by Vice President Mike Pence. McConnell praised Kavanaugh as being a fine jurist and said he looks forward to the confirmation process.
I think the president made an outstanding nomination. We look forward to the confirmation process, and it'll unfold in the next few weeks.
The 53-year-old Kavanaugh took part in investigations of former President Bill Clinton, helped former President George W. Bush prevail in the 2000 Florida vote recount battle, and served in the Bush administration before Bush nominated him to the federal bench. If confirmed, he would replace retiring Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy, for whom Kavanaugh once served as a law clerk. His nomination sparked furious opposition from many Senate Democrats, still bitter over Republicans' refusal to process former President Barack Obama's final high court nominee. They're also fearful of the impact an even more rightward-leaning court could have on America's legal landscape. Charles Schumer is the Senate Minority Leader.
The nomination could alter the balance of the court in favor of powerful special interests against working families for a generation. The pro-hard right Business Heritage Foundation wants only nominees who will side with the big boys against the average person. And in Judge Kavanaugh, they've gotten someone who would do just that.
Republicans hold a slim majority in the Senate, but Arizona Republican John McCain is in failing health, and so one or two Republican votes against the nomination could scuttle Kavanaugh's chances. One of the Republicans concerned about the judge's views on abortion rights is Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski.
I'm going to be asking for my own sit-down with him. I've never met him. So I'm anxious to meet him and to be able to visit with him one-on-one. So there's some work that we all have in front of us, and I'm looking forward to rolling up my sleeves and getting to work.
Murkowski, along with Maine Republican Susan Collins, expressed concern that any Trump nominee support the Supreme Court's decision that made abortion legal. Whatever Kavanaugh's leanings may be on hot-button topics, Republicans accuse their Democratic colleagues of elevating political considerations over the nominee's qualifications as a jurist. Utah's Orrin Hatch said Tuesday that Kavanaugh has outstanding legal credentials.
Brett Kavanaugh is unquestionably qualified. Like Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh has shown a commitment to the Constitution and to the principle that judges are to interpret the law, not make it up.
Republican John Kennedy of Louisiana sits on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He said that he believes that Kavanaugh will be confirmed.
You know, I'm going to hold him to the same standard I held Judge Gorsuch, now Justice Gorsuch. I want to cross between Socrates and Dirty Harry. I want a person of wisdom, but also someone who has the courage of his convictions. I want to know what's in his head, but I also want to know what's in his heart.
Kavanaugh, for his part, said, "I revere the Constitution. If confirmed by the Senate, I will keep an open mind in every case." Several Democratic senators, including three who voted to confirm Trump nominee Neil Gorsuch, face re-election in November. Jonathan Turley is a constitutional law professor at George Washington University Law School here in Washington. He says he doesn't expect Democrats to stage too harsh a campaign against Kavanaugh in an election year.
I expect that some Democratic senators will have trouble opposing Kavanaugh. Those senators up for the midterm elections in purple states could find this a difficult vote, to say the least. Kavanaugh is the perfect wedge nominee. He can wedge these Democratic senators away from conservative and independent voters on this issue. Kavanaugh is unlikely to make a lot of mistakes. He tends to be buttoned down. He tends not to go too far off the script. So for these Democratic senators, this vote could be quite important, not just to the country, but to themselves.
Turley says he thinks that Judge Kavanaugh will be confirmed, but he doesn't expect everyone to get all that they want on abortion rights, presidential power, or other issues.
The odds are is that Kavanaugh will make it through confirmation, and it's very likely that he will pick up a couple of Democratic votes. The question will turn entirely on whether some Republican senators really mean it, that they want assurances about Roe v. Wade, or they want assurances about his view of presidential power. They really aren't going to get that. What a nominee gives these senators is plausible deniability. They simply mouth the same mantra that Roe was settled a long time ago and that precedent should be respected. It means perfectly nothing. But it can be a lot to a senator who needs to go home and say, well, I just trusted him.
If Kavanaugh is confirmed, he would take his seat on the Supreme Court when the next session opens in October. Coming up, all 12 members of a Thai boys football team and their coach have been rescued from a cave. But what did the ordeal do to their minds? This is VOA's International Edition.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The last members of a stranded football team were rescued Tuesday from a cave complex in Thailand. As VOA's Arash Arabasadi tells us, four boys and their coach came out after a massive effort to save them.
Rescue operations came to a close Tuesday as crews evacuated the final members of the Wild Boar youth soccer team and their coach, who had been trapped in a flooded cave in Thailand since June 23rd. The Thai official who commanded the rescue operation spoke of its success.
Team Thailand, team government officials, private industry team, and the media that helped us, including the support from the whole world. We did something nobody thought possible. It's the first time in the world. It is our pride, mission possible of Team Thailand.
Most of the boys are at a nearby hospital under close medical supervision.
Upon arrival, we gave the boys tetanus and rabies shots, vitamin B1 and antibiotics through their veins, according to the treatment plan. In addition, we have found that two of the boys' X-ray results were abnormal, suspecting they might have pneumonia.
The hospitalized boys have so far been kept separate from their families, though some have seen each other through glass and spoken by phone. Medical officials will need to determine the boys' lungs are free from what is known as cave disease before releasing them from the hospital. The last remaining boys rescued Tuesday received on-site medical attention. Rescuers have been racing the clock since divers found the team on July 2nd. Monsoon rains have threatened both the stranded team of non-swimmers and rescue experts sent to save them. One seal died Friday after dropping air tanks along the cave's escape route. But today, it seems, rescue efforts were not in vain. Arash Arbasadi, VOA News.
While the members of the Wild Boar Club might be out of physical danger, the repercussions of their ordeal could carry on for months or even years. Faith Lapidus tells us now how mental health experts are assessing how their terrifying experience could affect the rest of the boys' lives.
Psychiatrists and psychologists say in the days and months ahead, the boys' families will be encouraged to keep a cautious watch as normal life resumes. Child trauma specialist Andrea Denisi says some boys could begin to experience depression, anxiety disorders, and other mental health problems brought on by the stress.
I would expect most of the children, if not all of them, to have some emotional symptoms, to have had some emotional symptoms in the cave, and still have some outside when they're rescued. This is very normal, so there are normative responses to traumatic experiences.
Doctors say the fact that the boys were not separated, but stayed together with their coach, would have improved camaraderie and lifted the boys' spirits. But the extreme experience could lead to changes in their brain's wiring that could cause behavior changes, says forensic psychiatrist Neil Greenberg.
Someone who was developing into a daredevil, for instance, might decide that they were going to take less risks. That's possible. But we also might see the opposite, where actually someone who didn't think they could cope with situations like this would actually realize that they could. And so that might actually increase their resilience.
That is called post-traumatic growth, meaning that anything that does not kill us makes us stronger. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Health conditions in Yemen's war-torn Hodeidah governorate continue to deteriorate as the World Health Organization warns of a possible resurgence of deadly epidemics. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The battle between the Saudi-led coalition and Houthi rebels for control of Yemen remains intense in Hodeidah governorate. This is putting at risk hundreds of thousands of civilians, including the many dependent on vital supplies that flow through the key port. The World Health Organization reports fighting has decreased somewhat in Hodeidah City and the port remains operational. While this offers a bit of relief, the UN agency described as dire the condition of the populace. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich notes Hodeidah continues to have the highest number of suspected cholera and diphtheria cases in the country. Apart from these two highly infectious diseases, more than 250 suspected cases of measles have been reported. Although the number of cholera cases has decreased, Jazarevich tells VOA people must remain vigilant because the disease can return.
We all remember how huge cholera outbreak was from 2017 with more than 1 million suspected cholera cases. It is really important that access, first of all, is ensured, that port remains open, that roads remain open, so we can provide supplies and preposition supplies, not only cholera kits, but also for other diseases.
WHO reports Hodeidah governorate also has one of the highest malnutrition rates in Yemen. Acute malnutrition rates among children in Hodeidah stand at more than 25%, and the severe acute malnutrition rate is at 5%. WHO warns the current escalation of fighting is likely to make matters worse. Jazarevich says, fortunately, 7 fully functioning therapeutic feeding centers in the region are keeping most of these children alive. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has described Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Meanwhile, world health officials reported to be stunned when the U.S. opposed a resolution for countries to encourage breastfeeding, especially when decades of research show that it is best for both moms and their babies. VOA's Carol Pearson spoke to two prominent doctors who wholly support the U.N. resolution based on scientific studies.
Millions of babies around the world would thrive if only they received mother's milk for the first 6 months of life, or even longer. The findings come from the largest and most detailed analysis of the benefits of breastfeeding. It was published in the Lancet Medical Journal 2 years ago. The study showed breastfeeding could save the lives of 800,000 babies per year. Dr. Dennis Kuo heads the General Pediatrics Unit at the University of Buffalo Medical Center. Speaking via Skype, he says while women need options, science is clearly on the side of breastfeeding.
The science of breastfeeding has been established for several decades.
Dr. Joan Younger Meek of the Florida State University College of Medicine said in a Skype interview, breastfeeding improves nutrition, decreases infections, and is cheaper than formula.
We know that right after birth, when the mother puts the baby to breast, the baby gets the colostrum, the early milk that the mother produces, and it's very high in immunoglobulins that protect the baby from infection. So that milk is critically important for babies. And then continued exclusive breastfeeding continues to support those health benefits for the baby.
For women to use infant formula, they need clean water, not just for the formula, but the bottles need to be clean. The nipples and spoons used to measure formula also need to be clean. If not, the baby can get diarrhea, which can be fatal. Dr. Kuo says because formula is expensive, if a mother tries to stretch it out, the baby will not get enough to eat.
The benefits of breastfeeding are extraordinarily high to be able to protect against these illnesses.
Breastfed babies have fewer ear infections, fewer digestive problems. They grow differently. Breast milk even protects children from obesity later in life. Dr. Dennis Kuo says formulas have improved over time with the addition of fatty acids and better quality proteins. But, he says, nothing can replace breast milk.
I appreciate that formulas continually do get better and better, but I have noticed that even our colleagues who work in the formula industry acknowledge that breast milk is the gold standard.
Breastfeeding also has clear benefits for the mother as well. For one thing, it reduces the chance that she'll hemorrhage after giving birth. Doctors say women need to be supported by their physicians, families, communities, and by their employers in order to breastfeed their babies successfully so the babies can thrive. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Turning now to sports, Paris erupted in firecrackers, flares, and shouts and tears of joy after France advanced to the World Cup final on Tuesday. Red smoke rose up from flares fired by fans on the right bank esplanade outside City Hall, where crowds watched a broadcast of a 1-0 victory over Belgium on huge screens Tuesday night. Samuel Umtiti scored the only goal in the semifinal with a header in the 51st minute at St. Petersburg Stadium in Russia. In the City of Lights, fans poured onto the streets from the chic Champs-Élysées to working-class neighborhoods on the edge of town. Firecrackers popped in quick succession, punctuated by car horns and football chants of "On est en finale," or "We are in the final." Some streets were closed to car traffic to accommodate fans. France will face the winner of Wednesday's semifinal between England and Croatia in the World Cup decider in Moscow on Sunday. The last time Les Bleus won the World Cup was 20 years ago when they hosted the tournament in 1998. At a somewhat quieter venue at the Wimbledon Tennis Championships, Serena Williams extended her unbeaten run at the All England Club to 19 matches, coming from behind to defeat unseeded Camilla Giorgi of Italy 3-6, 6-3, 6-4 in the quarterfinals Tuesday. Williams, who was ranked 181st in the world, moves up to 51st following the win, but will be hoping for a return to a more familiar number one spot over the coming months.
It's better than 183, so, or whatever I am. Got to keep trekking on, though, you know, it's not Serena Williams, 51. It doesn't have that same ring to it. You know, the one part does, but not the five, so...
Williams is seeking her eighth title at the All England Club. She meets Germany's Julia Gerges in the semifinal. Gerges ended the giant killing run of her close friend Kiki Bertens of the Netherlands to reach her first Grand Slam semifinal, 3-6, 7-5, 6-1. The other semifinal has 11th seed Angelique Kerber of Germany facing 12th seeded Yelena Ostapenko of Latvia. Kerber beat Russian Darina Kasatkina 6-3, 7-5, while Ostapenko downed Slovakia's Dominika Sibulkova. In the men's draw, 5th seed Juan Martín del Potro of Argentina defeated Gilles Simon of France in four sets, 7-6, 7-6, 5-7, and 7-6. Del Potro faces number 2 seed Rafael Nadal of Spain in the quarterfinals later on today. Also today, top seed Roger Federer of Switzerland plays Kevin Anderson of South Africa, and Novak Djokovic of Serbia faces Kei Nishikori of Japan, while American John Isner takes on Canada's Milos Raonic. You've been listening to International Edition. You remember, you can find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has imposed sanctions on 3 Nicaraguan individuals with connections to the government who are involved in serious human rights abuses and corruption. The actions were taken in connection with the ongoing crisis in Nicaragua, including the horrific violence perpetrated by security forces against demonstrators. Protests against the government of President Daniel Ortega have been taking place since April 18th. According to the U.S. Treasury Department, the violent response by the government has resulted in the death of at least 220 demonstrators and injuries to nearly 1,500. It also included beating of journalists, attacks against local TV and radio stations, and assaults on mothers mourning the deaths of their children. The 3 designated individuals are Nicaraguan's National Police Commissioner Francisco Javier Diaz-Madriz, Fidel Antonio Moreno Briones, who serves as the main link between municipal governments and the Sandinista National Liberation Front, known as the FSLN, and José Francisco López Centeno, president of the state-owned oil company Petronic and vice president of Albanisa, a private company that imports Venezuelan petroleum products. He also serves as treasury of the ruling FSLN party. U.S. Undersecretary of Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Sigal Mendelker said in a statement that President Ortega and his inner circle continue to violate basic freedoms of innocent civilians while ignoring the Nicaraguan people's calls for the democratic reforms they demand, including free, fair, and transparent elections. The U.S. sanctions, she declared, are part of the U.S.'s ongoing campaign under the Global Magnitsky Program to hold individuals who engage in human rights abuses and corruption to account. The sanctions mean that any property or assets these individuals hold in the United States are blocked, and U.S. persons are prohibited from engaging in transactions with them. In a separate statement, State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said that the sanctions show the United States will expose and hold accountable those responsible for the Nicaraguan government's ongoing violence and intimidation campaign against its people. These actions must end. Ms. Nauert said the United States supports the Episcopal Conference of Nicaragua's efforts to advance negotiations to resolve the crisis and urges full implementation of the June 15th National Dialogue Agreement on Human Rights as a critical component. The United States, she said, also supports calls for early, free, fair, and transparent elections. We will continue to monitor the situation closely and take additional actions as events warrant.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.